Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number, Rock Succession, is brought to us with yoga meditation music in mind, and that is our genre of rock music today. So we'll be hearing more about rock yoga later on in today's program, and it'll close it out as well. But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions today come to us once again from www.triviaplane.com and www.classicbands.com. Question number one, Frank Sinatra Jr. was kidnapped in December 1963. His abductors demanded $240,000 ransom from his father. What eventually happened? This is a multiple choice. Was it answer A, the ransom was paid and Junior was released? Was it B, the ransom amount was rejected but Junior was released anyway? Was it C, Frank Sinatra Sr. offered to pay $1 million for the safe return of his son, but the kidnappers only would take the smaller amount? Or was it answer D, Frank Sr. offered to pay more, but the kidnappers then raised the ransom to $10 million, which Frank Sr. refused to pay? Question number two, the band The Eagles formed when they met as a backing group for which singer? Multiple choice. Was it A, Tiny Tim, B, Linda Ronstadt, C, Paul McCartney, or D, Carole King? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. The transition section for today's program, brought to us by BGORecords.com, today in rock history. And today is the weekend of March the 12th and the 13th. What were the number one hits this weekend? Well, back in 1965, you may remember, it was the Beatles with 8 Days a Week. And it was 35 years ago this weekend, the Four Seasons, December 63, Oh What a Night, was number one. Back in 1983, it was Bonnie Tyler, Total Eclipse of the Heart. And back in 1993, 10 years later, Eric Clapton with Unplugged. If you were born on March the 12th, you share a birthday with Al Jarreau. He was born on that day in 1940, as was Paul Cantor of Jefferson Airplane, 1941, Liza Minnelli, Cabaret, 1946 on March the 12th, James Taylor, You Got a Friend, 1948 on March the 12th, and Marlon Jackson of the Jackson 5, born on March the 12th, 1957. Or, if you were born on March the 13th, you share a B-Day with Neil Sedaka. Breaking Up is Hard to Do, born on that day in 1939. Donald York, Sha-na-na, born on that day, March 13th, 1949. And Adam Clayton of U2, born on that day, 1960. Deaths this weekend include the jazz great Charlie Parker. He died on this weekend, back in 1955. Miscellany in rock history this weekend. Back in 1965, Eric Clapton leaves the Yardbirds, considers them to have become too commercial. And back in 1969, 4 years later this weekend, Paul McCartney marries Linda Eastman. 40 years ago this weekend, it was Jethro Tull releasing the album Aqualung. And 15 years ago this weekend, it was Mississippi lawmakers taking away a commendation from Glenn Ballard, who produced Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill, after the lawmakers are offended by the lyrics of the song You Ought to Know.
The dragon flies in the reed stew it. Sentimental centipede stew it. Let's stew it. Let's fall in love. Mosquitoes, heaven forbid, do it. Every Katie did do it. Let's do it. let's fall in love. The most refined lady works to him.
In local rock news, we see this article by David Menconi, entitled Music Done Their Way is Critical, and this was published in the News and Observer on the 4th of February, 2011. In the music industry, buzz can feel like an unseasonably warm stretch in the dead of winter. It's nice while it lasts, but it never does. The buzz dispensers quickly tire of this weekday moment's object of adoration and soon move on, and the aftermath can be unpleasant. Consider Tapes and Tapes, who first gained notice when 2006 self-released album The Loon turned the Minneapolis quartet into blogosphere darlings, but that quickly faded, and each subsequent Tapes and Tape album has picked up worse reviews than the one before. You can trace the devolution of their critical reputation in hipster circles through the influential website Pitchfork.com, which awarded the 2006 album an 8.3 out of 10 rave, but 2008's album dropped them all the way down to 5.9 rating, and their current album just picked up a wince-inducing 5.5. Alas, slings and arrows are part of the gig. Yelp and grooves. I don't think there's much value you can put into reviews because they're just somebody else's opinion, and we realize that, says Tapes and Tapes frontman Josh Greer over the phone from Minneapolis. I mean, we all love our music and everybody's entitled to their own opinion. Reading too much into that would be a recipe for disaster. Make you into a head case trying to cater to someone else. We make the music we want to make. If somebody else doesn't like it, well, we can't let that affect the music we make in the future. Undeserved opprobrium aside, their current album, Outside, is an immensely likable record that wears well, setting Greer's nervous yelp to elastic, skittery grooves with hooks sharp enough to stick. It's a less self-conscious take on Vampire Weekend's worldly underground rock with a vibe recalling prime Talking Heads. In fact, that's a comparison that you should probably see more often than you do. Tapes and Tapes seems to get compared with the iconic 90s alternative rock band The Pixies most frequently, but Talking Heads makes for a more accurate reference point. The article skips down and ends with this. Songwriting has never been too much of a struggle, Greer says. I sit down, play guitar, things happen, and I write songs. It's a process. I find very weird playing guitar and a song just comes out. I like playing by myself in the basement, which I try to do as much as possible, and just messing around playing guitar, trying things out, songs come. I think it's good to be constantly making music. At this point, I feel like we're all in it for the long haul and for a long time, he adds. We've got this album out, so it's time to tour. Then after that, it's more touring or getting back to demos and the studio for another album. The cycle of a band can be endless, so long as everybody is into it. At this point, we're four friends having fun making music together. That's where it sits. Until it stops, we'll keep on doing it. This next article is brought to us once again by David Menconi, published in the NewsObserver.com on February the 11th, 2011, entitled, Ukulele Player Doesn't Back Down. By now, Jake Shimabukuro is used to the sorts of challenges people throw his way. Renowned as a virtuoso of the ukulele, the 33-year-old Shimabukuro has been honing his craft since taking up the instrument at age four. But it wasn't until his 2006 instrumental version of the Beatles' While My Guitar Gently Weeps became one of YouTube's earliest viral videos that he broke through to the mainstream. Weeps is still a wonder, with Shimabukuro uncannily capturing the original's tones and feelings, despite having just four strings and two octaves to work with. And, of course, people have suggestions for other songs he ought to cover, which they're not shy about sharing. I'll get asked if I think anything's possible to play on a ukulele, he says, recalling from his home in Hawaii, and I'll say, yeah, if you use your imagination and you're stubborn enough. Then they try to stump me, and the one they mention most often is Bohemian Rhapsody, so I thought I'd put my money where my mouth is, and I took a shot at it. Mm-hmm. yes, Bohemian Rhapsody, Queen's 1975 magnum opus and a pop culture touchstone since Wayne's World revived it in the 1990s. So it is that a cover of Bohemian Rhapsody is the centerpiece of Shima Bakuro's new album, Peace, Love, Ukulele. And though no cover can match the majesty of Freddie Mercury's operatic Flights of Fancy, Shima Bakuro comes closer than most. Wayne and Garth would approve. I never truly appreciated all the subtleties in Bohemian Rhapsody until I started arranging it, Shima Bakuro says. Of course, anybody can play the melody recognizably, and everyone knows it by heart. But a song like that, which really takes a journey capturing the spirit of every section without sounding gimmicky or corny, was a real challenge. Most of the time when I'm arranging a song, I can sing a single-note melody from beginning to end, then add chords and voicings, he adds, but with Bohemian Rhapsody, it's hard to distinguish the main melody in some parts. It's almost like everything's happening together makes the melody, and if you strip away one thing, it doesn't sound like the song anymore. It was a delicate balance, figuring out some of the more obvious tones to let the listener fill in while taking care of the more subtle movements to fill in the parts. Almost a psychological game between performer and listener. The funny part is that Bohemian Rhapsody is the lone solo ukulele tune on Peace, Love, Ukulele. Every other track features full band arrangements, a setup Shima Bakuro loves. But the financial realities of traveling from Hawaii to the mainland for touring dictates that he do most of his live performing as a solo act, including Saturday in Raleigh. When I do play solo, it's a challenge to make people feel like they're not missing the other parts, he says. I approach the songs completely differently when I have a rhythm section. The bass frees me up not to have to play chords so much, and I can do a lot more single-line improvised solos. And there are moments I can even stop playing, let the rhythm section break into a groove. But the most important thing is to have fun up there and do what I can do to make sure the audience has a good time, whether it's just me or a full band. Paying respect. He names a few musicians as influential, including Jimi Hendrix and Andre Segovia, but says ball players are just as inspiring. People don't realize it, but music and sports are really the same, Shima Bakuro says. The mindset and level of focus Michael Jordan had, that's the same kind of focus people like Miles Davis or Charlie Parker had, finding a connection between mind, body, and spirit. I feel like every performance is like a big game, the Super Bowl. You work all season to try to get to this place, train for it, and come in as prepared as possible. On stage, with the lights on, it's game time. Jake Shima Bakuro. So, what do you know about today's featured genre of music, rock and roll yoga? Well, according to this article published in www.rockandrollyoga.com on the 21st of September, 2005, we see the following. Rock and roll yoga blends a flowing, moving yoga practice with traditional tantric practices that clear out the mind and lift the spirits. The high-energy classes are accompanied by soul, R&B, and hip-hop tunes, and joyful, irreverent attitude. By mixing a hard, hot vinyasa practice with good, loud, joyful music, students find that they have worked harder, stretched deeper, and wrung out their body and minds by the end of class, all while having a good time and not quite even realizing they were working at it. Yoga has the unique ability to strengthen and heal the body, soothe and clarify the mind, and elate the spirit. The article skips down. Used to be so rock and roll, thrashing at the Fugazi shows, sneaking into the 9:30, stealing smokes from Aunt Selma's handbag. Yeah. Lo, how the mighty have fallen. Nowadays, the closest you get to rocker cred is the Ramones t-shirt you wear to do your son's salutations. Unless, that is, you're doing them at Alexandra Luzzatto's spanking new rock and roll yoga classes at Hot Yoga. Luzzatto, a former D.C. punker and Xenia action babe who teaches yoga at the White House and the CIA, has swapped Krishna Das and Sanskrit mantras for A Tribe Called Quest, which is playing in the background now. David Bowie and The Clash. The practice mixes standard yoga poses with dancey moves to get you a little sweatier, a little faster. The constantly changing playlist, Hardcore, the way you remember it, with the dial turned way up, ensures you'll never get bored, no matter how many times you take the class. It's best not to attempt any moshing during Downward Dog. After all, you're not as young as you used to be. And we're fortunate to have with us in the studio today Heather LT, a registered yoga instructor from San Francisco, who'll be reading the blended parts of Alexandra Luzzatto, the D.C. rock and roll yoga instructor, and of Carol Horton, a political science professor turned yoga teacher from Chicago, who's writing a book on American yoga. The following transcript is from thinkbodyelectricblogspot.com and rockandrollyoga.com.
I've been a yoga instructor since April, but I started practicing yoga 12 years ago in Los Angeles. One of my teachers was this guy named Steve Ross. His class was jam-packed, and he played really loud music all the time. It was just a really different vibe. Nobody was doing it in D.C. at the time, so the audacity of doing something like a rock and roll yoga class definitely comes from my punk rock roots. The music you hear in my class doesn't have to be happy, but I want it to make you feel good. U2 works really well for yoga. I'm not a huge U2 fan, but I think it works because it's so big and it has that it's a beautiful day to be alive feel to it.
Police walk in for Jimmy Jazz. I said he ain't here, but he sure went by. Oh, you're looking for Jimmy Jazz. Yeah, they say, got the master gun for Jimmy Dredd. Cut off his gears and chop off his head. Police come look for Jimmy Dredd.
We've had some Clash, some Beastie Boys, some Dr. Dre. The best music, from a creative point of view, is not about the words. It's about the melody, the bass line, the groove. You don't want to be listening to the words in yoga. If the words snap you into thinking in a verbal way, then that defeats the purpose. America is so results-oriented and competitive that people get so nitpicky they miss the whole point. Yoga is about spirit and feeling connected to something bigger than yourself. When you're more lighthearted, you end up having fun and actually working harder. Then you get those results you were going for. I really like that a lot.
Sunday morning, and I'm falling. I've got a feeling I don't want to know.
I was in a store recently, and this old Velvet Underground song came on the radio. The lyrics were so innocuous, and today, they seem almost embarrassingly so. The singer, Lou Reed, comes off almost as an early 70s postmodern shaman, channeling the history of this strange magic that could break you free and change your life. The connection between yoga and rock and roll is that jolt of prana that comes from feeling fully embodied. From experiencing the deep pleasure that comes from moving, loosening, and maybe sometimes even breaking the bonds that keep us feeling small, restricted, or repressed. Back when I was in elementary school, I used to watch the black girls in my grade go out on the playground and practice their dance routines. Synchronized, polished, super cool. I wasn't growing up feeling any of that dance energy in my household. At that time, I couldn't do what those girls were doing, but it was easy for me to see that there was something important, something valuable going on there. In high school, I finally said, I'm not going to stay locked in these boundaries anymore. I discovered Patti Smith and saw a female rock and roll model that embodied art, poetry, freedom. I started going to rock and roll shows. I started to dance. Last year, I went to a yoga retreat that went beyond asana to include free movement and ecstatic dance. I talked to several workshop participants who had never moved so freely before in their lives. When I said that it brought me back to high school, they looked at me incredulously. They hadn't been post-hippie rock and roll chips. They had never known how transformative it is to move freely. Asana put them on a path where they finally felt free enough to dance, for the first time in their lives. For many people in this culture, experience such a sense of embodied freedom remains a revelation. It makes you want to say, her life was saved by rock and roll. In the best of our crazy North American yoga culture, I believe that we can experience a marriage of the energies of yoga and rock and roll in a way that enhances both. Rock and roll is one of the vital energies of our time. Conceptualizing it more broadly, it's very much embedded in the long-standing Western project of tearing down the social, cultural, and material barriers to individual freedom. Yoga is in many ways the same. An ancient Indian practice, a modern 20th century reinvention, a contemporary North American phenom. Yoga is nothing if not multicultural, and at its best, magically syncretic. Putting these two together, whether literally by combining asana and dance, or abstractly by connecting energetic experiences in our lives, the relationship between yoga and rock and roll is part of the spirit of the time. A zeitgeist to further explore and develop.
Well, thank you, Heather LT, for playing those roles for us today.
Namaste.
This next article comes to us from the New York Times, published on the 23rd of February, 2011, by Daniel J. Walken, entitled, Paul McCartney Collaborates with City Ballet. In an unexpected intersection of celebrity pop music and ballet, that most refined of the performing arts, Paul McCartney has written a major orchestral work for New York City Ballet. It's a love story titled Ocean's Kingdom and will be performed at the company's Fall Gala on September 22nd and on other yet-to-be-determined dates next season. In its current state, the ballet lasts about 45 to 50 minutes, is divided into four acts, and will feature a cast of about 40 to 45, including four or five main roles. Article skips down. In his first interview about the work, Mr. McCartney called it basically a romantic story involving two worlds, the Ocean Kingdom, representing purity, and the Earth Kingdom, the sort of baddies. The daughter of the Ocean King falls in love with the brother of the Earth King, and you'll have to see whether the couple make it, McCartney says. There's all sorts of troubles along the way. Mr. McCartney has long staked a claim in the world of classical music, and branching out into ballet music is just his latest foray into other realms. He has published books of poetry and children's literature and mounted shows of his paintings. The article skips down and ends with this. I've come to love working with orchestras, McCartney said. It's a great palette. He wrote some speculative music and began reading about dance and attending ballet performances. For me, the sheer athleticism is the most astounding thing about what I'm seeing, he said. It's like a meeting of the Olympic Games in art, and I find that fascinating and challenging for me to see what can be done.
Coming down, no matter what you do, I like it up here without you. The life, Mr. Bellamy, will have you down soon. one to tell me what to do. No one to hold my hand. Bellamy's got a lot to do, and I hope that you'll understand. Nobody here to spoil the view, interfere with my plans. Bellamy's got a job to do, and he's hoping you'll understand.
Paul McCartney. This final article comes to us from Daily Variety, entitled Wow Bow for Now, Compilation Breaks Six-Figure Barrier. And this was published on the 11th of February, 2011. Providing some momentary relief to the unsettled music business, the 37th edition of the Hits compilation, Now That's What I Call Music, arrived at number one on the U.S. album chart with the first six-figure sales tally of 2011. Article skips down. Now entered at the pinnacle with sales of 151,000 units, according to Nielsen SoundScan figures for the week ending Sunday. The Capitol distributed collection includes popular tracks by Eminem, Taylor Swift, Bruno Mars, Katy Perry, and Pink. Actually, it turns out we have time for even one more article. This one's entitled Jarvis Cocker to Continue Yoga Rock Music Marathon in London. It was published on October 20th, 2009, and it's published in www.yogadork.com. In news, public display of yoga, Yoga Pop. Britpop rocker Jarvis Cocker is back to soundtrack your yoga practice, that is, like his week-long stint of public rehearsals earlier this year at Paris's Galerie Shop. The pulp singer will regale patrons of the Village Underground venue in East London with nearly 7 hours of music every day from November 9th to the 11th. And like last time, rumor has it, the music marathon will be accompanied by yoga classes and other performances to kick it up a notch. The November event will be in promotion of a song he wrote for the movie, The Fantastic Mr. Fox. And once again, Mr. Jarvis is up for an all-out jam along, so bring your yoga mats and your instruments. Yoga block bongos, anyone? So how did you do on those trivia questions today? Answer number one, what eventually happened when Frank Sinatra Jr. was kidnapped in December 63 was that Frank Sinatra Sr. offered to pay the kidnappers four times as much as they asked for in ransom. But the kidnappers declined the higher amount in favor of the lesser amount, so it was answer C. Jr. was released, and the three men were all captured and sent to prison. And answer number two, the band the Eagles formed when they met as a backing group for answer B, Linda Ronstadt. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. If you have a suggestion for an artist, group, or genre of rock music to feature on Rock Review, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you.